Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. And as we do every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock, we welcome in our friend Caroline Fenton to the program, host of Caroline, Willie, and D. Mace. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How we doing?
We're very
good. Joe, are you back? Are you home?
He's back.
I am. I'm back.
Welcome home. It's been 84 years.
It's been a long time.
It does feel that way. I'm right back in time for a tornado.
Well, potentially. We'll see what happens.
What a nice welcome home. You missed all the beautiful 75 and sunny degree weather.
That's what I hear.
You did. So, Caroline, we were just discussing your Tigers last night. Not quite enough for Caitlin Clark. What did you make of that game and what last night meant for women's basketball?
Well, overall, it was just a great game. And I think overall, every storyline, at least on the court, because there's a whole lot of storylines off the court that have just become, frankly, exhausting. But I think it delivered in every single facet that you got the Caitlin Clark aspect, 9 threes tying a tournament record. You had Caitlin Clark dropping 41 points. You had Angel Reese and her dominant presence in the paint. It was just kind of like everything that you wanted from this game, competitive and back and forth. You got that. And I think overall for women's basketball, looking at my Twitter, you couldn't find a tweet that wasn't LSU and Iowa related. And that's new in women's basketball, frankly, when you have everyone across the country, sports fans across the country, completely engaged in a big time heavyweight Elite Eight matchup. That's frankly something I have to give Dawn Staley a lot of credit for, Kim Mulkey a lot of credit for, Lisa Bluter at Iowa a lot of credit for, Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and all of these characters that have kind of broken down this barrier to entry into the sport of women's college basketball and have made it truly a spectacle. It's a testament to the players, and it's a testament to the work that the coaches have done and all the players before the players that are playing now have done. So I think it was a good night for women's college basketball. I'm just ready for narratives that are a little bit more satiating than good versus evil or good versus bad or, this yin and yang fake division, lazy attempt at trying to create narratives. Like, I'm ready to graduate past that because, yes, it's a good story. And yes, I think as sports fans and just as humans, we want to compartmentalize things as good and bad. And we have that. And that's kind of the narrative between Iowa and LSU. Caitlin Clark, good. Angel Reese, bad. Even beyond that, Dawn Staley, good. Kim Mulkey, bad. I think it's good for narrative creation, but now that we have this newfound fan base in women's college basketball, like I'm ready for something a little bit more than that, a little bit more complex than that. Like we can do more than just one side good, other side bad.
Well, I totally agree with that. And some of that is the Ben Bolch, which I'm glad he apologized, ridiculous column he wrote in the LA Times.
It's like, just disgusting.
And look, I mean, honestly, I didn't know like that was like apparently a porn franchise, what he referenced. But he says he
didn't
do
that
it.
Either.
I guess
can
I
you say porn at 7:06 a.m.?
I think so.
Okay.
It exists in the world. We can't like play it, you know?
Yes, thankfully we cannot.
But I mean, that was, and I agree, like there is too much of that. I mean, I do think like there's nuance. Like, I mean, frankly, I like how Dawn Staley handles things way better than I like how Kim Mulkey handles things. But
that's fine. But
you're right. The good, evil, it's way out of bounds with some of this crap. I mean, Angel Reese last night, if anybody saw her presser, and this is, I mean, it's the big picture of that is like social media is just such garbage, you know?
It's a soul-sucking place.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're her, the crap, that she, imagine the crap. I mean, just imagine since last year and that. I thought it was great. They had an amazing game, and also I thought they had great sportsmanship last night. Like it was. I'm really glad that they got to play again. I do want to, on this whole point though, ask you, what did you think of the Washington Post story on Kim Mulkey?
It was obviously definitely not as damning as Kim Mulkey made it out to be. She called it a hit piece.
Right, she had no idea.
And maybe based off of the questions that he was asking her, or, you know, voicemails or messages that I'm sure that he did leave her over these last 2 years, I'm sure she did kind of assume the worst. What I wish the Washington Post article would have done was focus more in on the complexities of Kim Mulkey as a person, rather than trying to label her or pin her down as racist or homophobic. I felt like the piece kept trying to be like a gotcha kind of situation where, like, frankly, I didn't know about the relationship between Kim Mulkey and her father. I think that is a really good peek behind the curtain as to what kind of person she is, or maybe the background of how she became who she is. And for those who didn't read it, she found out that her dad cheated on her mom, and the day that she found out, she hasn't talked to him ever again. Like, I think that's a really interesting story, you know, the coming of age story of Kim Mulkey. I wanted to hear a little bit more about, you know, her time at Baylor and how she, maybe it was labeling her as homophobic because she felt like, hey, maybe be who you want to be and hear, and don't be so, I don't know the right word to use, but basically, like with Brittany Griner, she was like, look, it's hard to be in Baylor in a Baptist town and frankly, and be black and gay. I mean, that's just, that is what it is. Maybe you could look at that and say that Kim Mulkey's a terrible person, or maybe you could look at it through the lens of Kim Mulkey was just trying to protect her players in a place that's not very accepting, and frankly, in a time that isn't nearly as accepting as it is now. I would have liked to have peeled back the layers a little bit, talk about how complex she is as a person, rather than trying for it to be such a gotcha story.
Well, okay.
'Cause there's a lot that I don't know about Kim Mulkey.
Yeah. I mean, I think I hear what you're saying, but that's the thing. If she talks to him, I promise you that's where the layers get peeled back more, right? Like, I think she was really upset that he contacted her family, but I mean, we could go back and forth on this. I hear what you're saying. I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff in there that wasn't gotcha too, but anyway.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting.
What do you make of Kelly Harper being fired and where the Lady Vols go from here, trying to get back to national prominence, which, quite frankly, Caroline, is a place they haven't been in more than a decade now?
Yeah, I was surprised that they made the move now, but I think that it's a message from Danny White that, look, the standard hasn't been met, and it hasn't been met since Kelly Harper took over, and why waste any time? And it's not just about the result. I think it's also about the future, that the recruiting classes are not up to par with some other top programs in the country, or frankly, even within the conference, that they haven't been cleaning up in the transfer portal nearly as well as maybe some other teams in the country and in the conference, that it's not just the result now. It's also the, what's the reason for optimism moving forward? That you have one of the best players in the country in Rekia Jackson. She's going to be a top three, top five pick in the WNBA draft. And all you could muster up was the Sweet 16. So I understand it. And it's a message from Danny White that, look, men's basketball is one of the best programs in the country. Tony Vitello, in what he's been there for 4 years, this is his fourth, fifth season. He has put Tennessee baseball on the map. Tennessee baseball really hadn't been relevant since the Todd Helton years. And Tony Vitello has now become a frequent flyer to Omaha. So I think that that's Danny White's way of saying, look, we have all these other coaches and other programs and the expectation is high. We have other coaches and other programs that have been able to put us on the map, and you coach for a brand that is already established in this sport, and you haven't been able to make it to the Elite Eight in 5 years. Like, we have to go find the best coach available. And I think about what comes next. You know, Willie asked me yesterday, is it time that they kind of go outside of the circle, go outside of the Pat Summit circle of trust? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Just go find the best coach available. If that coach has Pat Summit ties, then great. That's a wonderful story for that coach and the ties to this program. If that coach doesn't have Pat Summit ties, then that's fine. That's just the best coach right now for what this program needs, because the SEC is only getting more competitive. LSU and South Carolina and, frankly, Ole Miss and what Shea Ralph is doing at Vanderbilt, they're not going away anytime soon.
Well, let's keep it to hoops. What about Tennessee?
Joe is salivating.
Yeah,
right now.
This is my kind of segment right here.
I hope he enjoys it, because we got about a week left until next March.
Yeah. What did you think of the Tennessee Purdue game? What's your prevailing takeaway, Caroline?
My prevailing takeaway is that, look, it was a tough game against a really good team, against the best player in the country. I do think that the officiating was frustrating, and I know that, Joe, you refused to acknowledge that. I was frustrated by the officiating, and you can blame the officiating all you want. Overall, that's not why Tennessee lost the game. Tennessee lost the game because it was the Dalton Kinect show and nobody else decided to show up. That Jonas Adu, you know, couldn't hit a rim if it hit him in the face. That Zakai Ziegler, frankly, wasn't good enough offensively. That Josiah Jordan-James had a solid first half, but in the second half just completely fell flat. That if Tennessee wanted to beat Purdue, a one seed, one of the best teams in the country with the best player in the country, it was going to have to be more than just Dalton Kinect. Even though Dalton Kinect had 37 points, he still had plenty of wide open looks that just fell flat. Like, I know in first half, Santiago Vescovi had a wide open three and he just hit the rim. There were a couple of Dalton Kinect wide open threes that he just didn't make. So overall, we weren't good enough outside of Dalton Kinect, and you can't beat really good teams if you only have one player that shows up.
Caroline, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to be with us. And I and George, you're welcome back to Rex Road today. Good stuff. Good to have Rex Road back in the building and Caroline throwing shade at him. It's good stuff.
That's what I'm used to.
If you want to say that a whistle whenever a player just simply brushes up against Zach Edey is annoying and frustrating, you can say that.
Yeah, that you can. Yeah. I got a lot to say about this whole thing. Not really the officiating stuff, but let me promise you, I will say, like, I'm going to pull the rank of I was 10 feet away from this. Like, I was right there watching.
Here we go.
But that does probably give you a little bit better view, right? Like, I was right there. Dude, Tennessee fouled him 30 more times than they were called for fouling. Because you have to. Like, they fouled the crap out of him all day just to try to not let him stand under the basket.
You can call a holding on every single play, too.
Yes, but if you're blocking a 400-pound, incredibly athletic D-tackle, you're going to have to hold that guy every play, right? And that's what Edey is in basketball. I mean, I get it's frustrating, but, I mean, you got to keep that in mind.
I think that it's the problem for me is the consistency. Getting the benefit of the doubt of a whistle.
I get you.
That Tennessee wasn't getting.
Right. People bounce off the dude and his elbows are at their head from the start. So it's like Shaq. It's very much reminds me of Shaq, where it's like, you know, no one else is nearly as strong or big as him. And so it looks like he's fouling people all the time, but he's just like moving.
Joe Rexroad.
Just massive.
A Zach Edey Bobo. We figured that out here on the program.
Edey Bobo.
That's my guy.
A Boilermaker Bobo.
Yeah. Oh, that's even better.
Boiler Bobo. Hey, I hope DJ Burns puts 40 on him Saturday.
I hope so, too. We'll see what happens.
I hope so, too. Man, and I hope that DJ Burns is playing right tackle for the Tennessee Titans in 2024.
That'd be awesome. Caroline, great stuff. We'll be listening at 11 o'clock.
All right, appreciate y'all.
Caroline Fenton joins us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock here on the program. We'll react to what she had to say coming up next. Get into the Titans. It is draft months. And we got some draft takes that we need to get to coming up next. We'll do that. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.